we're going to talk about some of the implications of what we've been studying in bananas. Have any of you listened to the tape of Monday night? Any response? All right, 1 Peter. Chapter 1, verse 18. Well, let's start. Let's start in verse 3. You have to accept, finally, the possibility that this thing, this whatever it is, process thing, label, called Christianity, is something so totally different that you do not yet know anything about it. That it is so all-inclusive, its effect is so all-inclusive, that it has no home whatsoever in the value system that you presently still have in your mind. There has to be a place in which there becomes a radical cutting away of everything that you've ever held dear. Everything you have ever thought, everything, even that the things that you think of now. I mean, Christianity is an invasion by an alien force that won. I mean, it has more implications. It's wilder than if we literally were invaded by another planet. Because if we were invaded by another planet, then you could still have a system of private hopes and conversations and dreams and ambitions. Where you, as in any invaded country, you try to make plans to reestablish your worth and reestablish the system and reestablish the things that were precious to you. But it's a total and complete invasion and a victory, and you've lost. You've lost everything. In Hebrew, the only pattern of behavior in this new government is love. It's faith which worketh by love, better yet, better stated. But it is not a love that has any home in the way in which you have looked at yourself and your surroundings thus far. It's a love that the only way I can think about it or talk about it is in terms of its opposites. To the English language and to most Western languages that I'm aware of, the opposite of the word love is
hate.
In Hebrew, the opposite of the word love is totally different. Do you have any idea what it is?
No.
apathy.
Well, that's interesting.
The opposite of love in Hebrew is apathy. Now, especially in stealth, I want you to see that all that has taken place thus far in your life as a believer is apathy. No matter what you think you've been through, no matter what has taken place thus far since you began to name the name of Christ, from God's standpoint, it's been the opposite of love. You've been in a state of being in the spirit called apathy. The evidence of your apathy is massive. You don't want to go to trial. Can you buy that?
Well, I'm not sure. I didn't know I was accused until just now.
You're accused. I'm just accusing you. I'm accusing you of being, from a spiritual standpoint, totally and completely apathetic.
Apathetic includes what? Sloth?
Sloth, lukewarmness. The spiritual meaning of apathetic is that you are the unwise steward who buried the treasure. Is there anybody that wants to try the justification of saying, I've done the best I can?
My way of dealing with this is to say, well, God has caused us to be this way up to this point, so
that's unsatisfactory.
Something else.
That's not satisfactory for this moment. Your statement of that indicates your refusal to die daily. It indicates your refusal to be delivered as a sheep to the slaughter. It's the same thing Harry went through the other night.
Do we have that choice of refusing it?
You sure you want to go on with that?
Well, I hate to.
Yeah, you hate to be sitting right behind
you. You don't think you can say, I'm kind of counting a little mercy here as I pour myself out.
Just like this, everything else up until now hasn't worked. All the self-seeking, whatever it has been that you've been doing has just brought you to a point where it hasn't worked. I mean, you owe $5,000 in taxes and on and on.
Let me talk about apathy for a minute. The statement that Larry just made, Gary, one of the Gary guys, was the statement that accepted Kadesh Barnea. And blamed God for it. You understand?
Consciously. They stayed in Kadesh Barnea. Were they sitting at Kadesh Barnea whenever the spies came back? Is that where they were? Where were they when the spies came back?
They left here at Passover. They arrived here at Pentecost. They arrived here at Rosh Hashanah, and that's when the spies went in, just before Rosh Hashanah. and then they stayed there for 39 years.
Never having enough money to pay their bills.
Well, that's probably bad.
Now, what constitutes why did they stay at Kadesh Barnea?
Because going back to Egypt just wasn't an option. And it was too scary to go ahead and go into the promise. And Kadesh Barnea wasn't that bad.
Well, they were forbidden to go into the promise.
By
whom? Well, by God, because they didn't go in whenever the spies told them. And then they tried to go into the mountain, and then those that went over were destroyed. We tried to go in without... Right?
It just wasn't that bad.
It was that bad that they were proud.
It was less bad than no one promised.
Let me give you another way of thinking about it.
Right.
Fuck you, right?
Huh?
I said, fuck you, I don't care what my question is. Ain't gonna do me no good. I mean,
we've said
I thought God did forbid them because they didn't, and then there were those that tried to go in after they'd said, no, you're going to sit here. And then those were destroyed.
Why?
Because God told them to stay there.
Well, they were destroyed because they attempted to enter on their own by their own. But they stayed at Kadesh Barnea until they were shed of the grave clothes of Egypt. Let me give you another way of looking at it. They stayed at Kadesh Barnea until they no longer knew the Egyptian language. There was no one that entered the promise that knew the language of Egypt. Well, what about Caleb and Joshua? They had forgotten it. Caleb and Joshua forgot the language of Egypt the moment they, as the two spies, saw. What is it that prevents you from saying, let's go down all the charismatic promises, the promise scriptures. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, all things shall be added unto you. If any two of you agree as touching anything, it shall be done for you by my Father which is in heaven. Whatsoever you ask the Father in my name shall be done for you. On and on and on. We're going to leave Peter a minute. Let's go to Isaiah 30. What?
Keep your finger in Peter.
Isaiah 30. Why do you still pray and get no answer? Therefore, for the most part, you give up praying. What is wrong with Larry's or Gary, I can't, Gary guys.
Okay, we're all fucked.
what is wrong with, why not have the faith, or Jesus said over and over, have ye the faith of God? I mean, is it possible in that arena that you call your mind to simply say, catch a fish and pull out $5,000? Now, Gary's response, I guarantee you, in the spirit, I can feel it, will be, I used to believe that. By the act of saying, I used to believe that, what you are saying is, the reason I don't now believe that is because I've listened to you.
I would say I believe it under different understanding. My concept of faith at that time was soul power.
What does God hate worse than anything?
Saying abandon the flesh.
Saying what?
Thing said in Ezekiel about
that. Saying that the Lord has forsaken me.
Yeah.
He's forsaken the earth. Can you put, I can't, can you either move over or. The Lord hath forsaken the earth. When you say the Lord hath, you don't ever say it. It's your walk that says it. When you say the Lord hath forsaken the earth, you are saying it is a vain thing to serve God.
You run into saying that the table of the Lord is contemptible at that point.
That's right. That's exactly right. Now, you got to get way down now, way down deep into the recesses of the closet. I don't want any religious bullshit, all right? The reason you believe, because I believe all of you believe in God. The reason you believe the Lord hath forsaken you is because you believe you're not worthy. The only way you can believe you're not worthy is to believe or to see or to have a consciousness of your sin and your error and your mistakes. Right? I mean, isn't that where we really are? I mean, when we come right down to getting away and throwing away all the religious garbage that we've all got in our minds, isn't the real truth is that you believe the Lord has forsaken you because you're not worthy, because you've screwed it up somehow, that your thought processes and all of the other things are in that arena. I mean, you can pump yourself up and get, you know, to sort of, so you don't have to look in that little side of the closet. But at the bottom line, isn't that where you really are?
Well, yes, that's definitely
there. No matter what, it's never been enough.
You think you've screwed up. You think you've made a mistake, or a series of mistakes. You still are in the arena where there are conditions and thought processes and things way down deep in the closet that causes you to believe you're not worthy. Now, for most of you, the reason that I mean, one of the areas that that is in this area that we're going to talk about at great length, and that is compulsive behavior. But it isn't just compulsive behavior, it's compulsive thoughts. And in those compulsions, it's just, it makes the grace of God a lie. That you really believe that you have to get that area right before you can deserve to be dealt with.
You believe that because you have that compulsion, you're not right? Or you have that compulsion because you believe you're not right? Which one, or is it?
Doesn't matter. It's circular. Mm-hmm. Now,
12 years of Bible studies has served to eliminate all the compulsions that weren't really the basic ones. And it's narrowed it down to the worst and intensified them.
You've gotten rid of your surface compulsions.
Yeah, it's left me with the worst compulsions intensified. But it's the same one. At least there's this, the one thing that is compulsive with me is fear response. You know, to an emotional fear response, and it's, there may be a lot of other things, but that's the central compulsive response, that thinking that when I get to that place, when that's no longer there,
then am I communicating with you?
I can't identify with that room. It may be true with me, but it doesn't
sure anymore.
I don't think about being unworthy anymore. Though in compulsive behavior, I feel bad. But it tests me at the point of sin being dealt with, and whether I believe it or not. Is sin dealt with, is this sin? If sin's dealt with, this can't be sin, this is something else. I don't know.
Yeah, but again, I want to get beyond that. I want to get us to a point where we don't have any words. I want you to get to the point where the problem with this doctrine, this, is that what you do is, because I do it too, is you can make this to be great license internally, deep down license. You understand me? You can excuse anything and everything, and you take a stand on the excuse, but it doesn't really work, because down at that next, you go down the stairs, yeah. And down the stairs there are no words down there.
Oh.
Well, let me ask, is there any other kind of compulsion? I mean, that's how compulsive mine is.
Is
believing that is, I mean, it's projected. It's not only within me, but it's projected outward. I mean, that's the only way I can relate to that kind of...
Like everybody has the same one, you
think? That there isn't any other real one besides that. I mean, I can't even... I mean, that's... I mean, what other kind... Tell me something that's endemic to you that, you know, I mean, a compulsion is so, I mean, that's the way I know about fear. I mean, what other kind of compulsions are there?
It's that noise. No. What other compulsions? Rick's response to anyone he considers in authority. It's automatic. It's beyond words. It's instantaneous. You don't think that's a compulsion? My own deals with sex. I mean, I told Tyra and almost killed her that if, you know, I can't do anything about it. If I mean, I told her that if I were sitting in a restaurant and two girls called me, I mean, or came over and said, let's go have a threesome, I mean, I couldn't stop myself. I mean, it would be so totally, I'd be gone, I'd be history. You're smoking, don't you think that's a compulsion? My smoking. Different people drinking. Alcoholism. Those are all compulsions. You have to respond outwardly by a manifestation. You know, I won't go into Harry's. Those are compulsions. They're automatic, predictable behavior that no matter what is said, it takes place. Now, those are the arenas where you believe that God has failed you, that the Lord has forsaken the earth. Therefore, you say silently to yourself without words, I'm not worthy for the grace of God. Therefore, your response to the not being worthy to the grace of God, when a need is manifested in your life, the instantaneous thing you do, as opposed to going to God automatically as a small child, you go to the world. You find your sustenance in the world automatically.
Is that what the language of Egypt is?
That's right. You understand me? Now, look in Isaiah 30.
You know, until you were talking just now, Ed, and you recounted all those things, that I think that's also a result of compulsion is this not being able to really see that in other people, you know, or believe that it's, you know, that they're really compulsive. That it's, and you know, it you know, when you asked me, starting with Gary, if I believe that they, you know, it was a compulsion, that they could do something about it, you know, it brought me to that place of, you know, of thinking about Gary. If Gary could be different, I know he would. I mean, if that were his, if he had the ability, the wherewithal within him, he would have changed it. And it just, I think that's the result of being, you know, when you're in compulsion, you're not able to really care or feel about anybody else's except the elimination of your own.
Well, as you probably can tell where I'm going with all this, is that the compulsive behavior that we all experience is what keeps us from being in the opposite of love. It's what keeps us in apathy. Because the compulsive behavior requires us to believe the lie. We have to choose to believe either faith or the sensory evidence. And we always believe the sensory evidence. God, by faith, has said, you are clean. You, on the other hand, call yourself unclean. You know, that's why there's this wild thing that takes place. I can't remember what it is right now, but it says, "Woe unto those who call unclean what God has declared clean." Now, this is going to get down to the short hairs, folks. Well, I'm telling you, there's an inexorable process that will take place. If you do not believe that you are clean, and the areas where you don't believe you're clean are the, maybe others, but I know that the areas that cause you to believe you're unclean are your compulsions. So the only thing that's keeping you, or us, in Kadesh Barnea is the lie that we believe our compulsions more than we believe the eternal declaration that now you are clean by the word that I have spoken. Now, I don't care what you think you talk about. I'm talking about what's going on in the closet. And because you don't believe you're worthy, your instant response when faced with need has to be to rely on the language of Egypt. And now, rather than, because you ask and receive not, because you ask believing that you will consume it on your own lusts. You believe that lie.
I'm not following what believing in the language of Egypt means.
Your language defines your course of action. You know that enough by now. You know, we've talked, huh?
Matter of lying.
Yeah. Well, you know that we've talked that, for those of you who haven't listened to tape from Monday, you'll listen to it, that the thing that preceded the fall was, and caused the fall, was when Adam named everything.
That was Monday?
Mm-hmm. Why did...
I'll have to listen. I told him he's going to have to listen to what Scrapham said anyway.
Yeah, I'll just say it to the 300. I said, no.
Well, you already,
yeah,
I was
in
the book.
You already read the book. This is a biblical.
Yeah, I read. But I didn't see that in.
Don't you know yet all the really bright people?
Without the use of names, without naming something, no reasoning could occur. Without naming, there could, all it names are man's attempts to index past and future. Without the use of names, there could be no consciousness of time past or time future. There would only be the mystery that we've been seeing, that rather than the belief system in the idea of sequential time, which causes you to believe things are going to get better, all it would be was what we call the movement of time would simply be a reel that was showing the same mystery over and over and over, every night and every day, every season. You would not see sequential time. You would be only aware of the mystery of Christ in you, the hope of glory, because that's all you would see in the heavens, that's all you would see in the universe, that's all you would see in nature.
Yeah, it's a good lie. It's not linear, it's circular.
Well, it's just the mystery that's unfolding day after day and night after night. One mystery just keeps being repeated. But because we named things, Now we are aware of sequential time. Without the use of names, there would be no reasoning. Without reasoning, there would be automatic innocence. Prior to the fall, man was in a state of innocence. He was only aware of God as all and in all. But God caused him to name the names so that you could go through the process from innocence to the fall to going through the whole, all possible alternatives until you see the vanity of all the names and you return to innocence. But now the innocence now has got a new dimension. It's now tested innocence, which is holiness. That's all that's happening. Now,
what gums up the process of all the names being tested?
Well, let me show you. Let me. Without reasoning, if there was no capacity to reason, which there would be if there were no capacity to name, if there were no capacity to reason, then by definition, there could not be even a consciousness of sin or error or mistake. Do you understand me?
It's hard to imagine what there would be without all this.
God.
God's
what there would be. Can you see now another dimension of why Christ said, except you become as a converted and become as a little child, you can no wise enter the kingdom? He wasn't kidding.
You know, when Jackie responded to something you said about looking at tape, she said, yeah, it's about the time children start talking that they're evils begin to show forth.
Now, once you are fully conscious of the sin of naming, fully consciousness of sin, period, your automatic response is the abandonment of self. I mean, you got to understand, you are nothing but a vessel. You never intended to get better. You're intended to be a vessel. No more concerned with activity, only concerned with receptivity. It's the naming of names, the language of Egypt, that has deceived you. Now, what gums up the works, God says that everything in the universe is a parable, is a metaphor, including the Bible.
Yeah, does even our doctrine become...
Watch. Here we are. Watch. See that word? Literalize. We had a great deal of problems with it last night. Doug, define literalize.
To see the word as the reality.
Okay. It's to make something true that isn't true. The greatest heresy that can take place from God's standpoint is to literalize a metaphor. To literalize a parable. That's every opinion that you have came from, including some opinion about your own sin or something, came from the idea that you have literalized a parable. It's heresy.
Yeah.
That's what gums up the works. That's what literalizing the parable, literalizing the metaphor, is defined. That's what Babylon is.
To make something real that's...
To make a parable truth.
Something you do.
Or believe in.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
Okay, see this? The only reason... We did this last night, but I gotta do it again. The only reason... This pencil is simply that we've all agreed to pretend to call this a pencil. But it's a pretense. It's the fruit of an agreed upon lie. It's a parable, but we literalize the parable when instead of saying this is a pencil, we should be saying this is named a pencil. You understand me? Now, even it's even worse because it isn't really a pencil, it's a pen. You're not understanding me, but that's all right. Jesus said, all things are parables. You understand that? Therefore, all things reveal something other than what they appear to on the surface. When you literalize the parable, you make the parable the truth. And it makes you have a belief or an opinion. That is relying on Egypt. That is the language of Egypt. And it's the religion of Babylon. It's what keeps you from going to God in prayer. It's what keeps you from hearing. It's what causes you to doubt. It's what causes you to be double-minded. It's what causes you to be in a state of happiness and praise one minute and sadness and depression the next. It's because there's two still. Now, back to Isaiah 30. Does anybody understand? Do you understand? All right. Now, the reason now you're in a state, since you really believe by your language that God has forsaken you, therefore, you can't go to him in prayer. Or you may act like you're going to him in prayer, but you really aren't.
You go in words.
You go in words. But the very instant you're going to him in words, the language of Egypt, which is your real thing, is taking place. And Isaiah 30. Woe to the rebellious children, saith the Lord, that take counsel, but not of me, and that cover with a covering, but not of my spirit, that they may add sin to sin, that walk to go down into Egypt, and have not asked at my mouth, to strengthen themselves in the strength of Pharaoh, and to trust in the shadow of Egypt. Believe it or not, folks, the strength of Pharaoh is the name, the language.
That's why in politics, somebody like Reagan becomes such a powerful person because he gives voice or gives word to, a sentiment that's already out there. It's
therefore shall the strength of Pharaoh be your shame. God intends that you no longer be in a state of apathy, that your words no longer be stout against him, that you no longer say it is a vain thing to serve God, that you no longer say the table of the Lord is contemptible, that you see that you're simply a vessel that contains that which is life, and you begin to live in his resurrection as opposed to your understanding of his resurrection, as opposed to your words about his resurrection. You can't do that until you see the sin of the words. Until you see the sin, the strength of Pharaoh is the language. Then you can be as Caleb and Joshua and instantly forget the language of the world. What gives? I mean, stop a minute, okay? That vessel called Larry Ferguson, most of its time operates in fear, right? Okay, so what? Can you let it be? Can you see that that is just the garment that has no power? It's the garment of the vessel. It has nothing to do with the reality of Christ.
Well, I'll tell you, I haven't. I mean, there may be, there have been glimpses of that, but it's the same. You know, where I haven't seen it fully, it's the same thing. It causes me to want to make other people get their own thing right, because I still think there's this illusion at times that, I mean, the fullness of it hadn't struck me down.
Well, let me ask all of you a question. You all know me pretty well, right? You think I'm going to get better? Do you care whether I get better?
I would say, I don't know much about your compulsions. And so, I mean, I don't think in terms of you getting better from the way I see you all the time. I never think about you getting better as far as the way that I see you manifest right here. You know, I guess there's been times in your relationship with, you know, the weakness that showed up with Tyra. I don't think that's going to get better. But I guess I don't know the other part of it, enough that it hasn't been.
Well, there's nothing hidden. I mean, you know as much about me as anybody does. That's not a good example.
About change. I mean, it's a strange question. Change,
well, the reason I asked it that way is because it's far easier to look outwardly and see
what would be better.
Well, I don't know. I was talking about.
Yeah, that's what I can't.
Yeah, but maybe I'd stop cussing or I'd stop smoking.
Well, that doesn't make it better.
That doesn't make it better. We've always kind of enjoyed those things.
Look. Well, let's get off of that thing. I want you to come to a point where, you know, where you can pull yourself out of yourself and be able to say, hey, every smallest molecule about me is exactly the way it should be, and I'm content. The only thing that's keeping you from doing that is the language of Egypt. There is no, you know, the $5,000 isn't your business. The $50,000 isn't Rex's business. I mean, no, 500,000. That's just a nice story he likes to tell. What is the truth? I mean, there is nothing about you that's your business any longer. That doesn't make it my business either. But can you see that the thing that has kept you from knowing that is your language? Now, no matter how wild this sounds, you don't have to believe your language anymore.
Language is the tool of accusation. The method of accusation.
I mean, every time your mind begins to talk to you, you can say, at the moment it uses one word, you can say, "Get thee behind me, Satan." Or you just turn. You don't need it anymore. That's the great mystery of all time is, from the spirit standpoint, when it says, "When I was a child, I thought as a child, I reasoned as a child. When I became a man, I put away childish things." The instruments of thought and reason are the instruments of language that you put away when you become, in the spirit, the young man. They don't have any more power over you. And that's a statement of declaration, if you can agree with it, to say amen. Then the silence fills the temple. And no man can work. But the resurrected Christ does nothing but work, and his works do follow him no longer, leading you about by the nose. Can you hear that? When I was a child, I thought as a child, I reasoned as a child. Huh? The language is, from a spiritual standpoint, a childish thing. Now, to somebody like an Ed Housewright, or to people that have made, well, Rex is a good example. He's made his living all his life with words and language. It's a hard thing to hear. But the thing that has caught, that language is really the prison. "I have come to set the captives free, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord." The bars of your prison are your words. Greatest bars of your prison are your words about yourself. That's the real, that's that inner prison that... You got it, you guys, if you haven't listened to it, listen to that text.
I'm thinking about, you know, where it says, you know, "Let us not love in word, but in deed and in truth." You know, the idea of being loved, I mean, you know, to love somebody in word, to be loved in word, there's never any possibility of a connection.
Listen. The antithesis, the enemy of words, love. Listen, with everything I've just said tonight and everything you've heard in the last few weeks and months, listen to something with a new ear. "Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not love, I am become as sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal." Now remember, from God's, to have not love is a spiritual condition that means you're in a state of apathy. It doesn't mean that you have something else. And love in the Hebrew is an action word. Love is simply the life in the promise. It's action continually. Not action defined by the words of Egypt or the language of Pharaoh, but a new thing altogether. "And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains, and have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not love, it profiteth me nothing. Love suffereth long and is kind. Love envieth not. Love vaunteth not itself. Love is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Love never faileth. But whether there be prophecies, they shall fail. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. Now, all of that is the state of being without the words, the language, the strength of Pharaoh. That's not something you learn more words about. That's the state of being, that's the promise of the resurrection. That's an automatic when the words are gone. For now we know in part, and we prophesy in part, but when that which is perfect or completely tested is come, then that which is in part shall be done away. When I was a child, I spake as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child. When I became a man, I put away childish things. What we're going to do is we can do it right now. We can declare by the Hebrew method of this law. I can say to you, and you can be in agreement, all you have to do is say amen, that from this moment forward we divorce words. That's all I had to do to get a divorce. That's why they had it. That's why they did it that way.
Why you talking a lot? I just kept hearing
two scriptures. One about we're delivered up all the day long, and the other one about you'll be delivered up before kings or whatever. And take no thought for what you will say, because it's given to you by the Father.
Now you can understand what it means. Let every man speak as the oracle of God. But in order to speak as the oracle of God, you have to think as the oracle of God. That didn't mean you got to memorize all the words about what that means. It means you're free. You've divorced yourself from names.
Yeah. You don't
believe the literal anymore.
You're not sucked up by
this thing he said about, was it a sodic, whatever, being a conduit, the vessel is simply being a conduit, it's God at one end and others, you know. And if there's an uninterrupted flow of the Father through the vessel to the others, then the only way to take thought, the only way to have the internal dialogue is to grab on to what it is that's going through there. Grab it, hold it, look at it, name it, manipulate it, arrange it, maybe let it out in some way or another. But if it's never grabbed onto, if it just flows through, there's no language, there's no internal dialogue.
No. Hmm. You don't have to go there. I'm just going to read it. You are a chosen generation. Now, the word generation there doesn't mean like, okay, that's a 40-year period or whatever bullshit people teach you about.
What's he taught us then?
Huh?
It's 40 years.
Yeah, but that's what we're talking in Hebrew. The generation here, you are a chosen generation, means you are a new race of people. It's even worse than that. Or better. You are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Names are the signs of darkness, the signposts. Understand that? They're the signs of the signposts, the map of the darkness. You don't have to pay attention to that anymore.
I was going through, you know, this idea about names, and it hadn't hit me, but you know, if I think about Pam, if I put that name, then you know, just in a moment, there are a whole lot of things that flooded on me, and Jessica and Jacob, and you, a whole lot of things flooded in on me about, you know, like almost like grades, or you know, like whole things of bodies of grades. Stuff that's not right now.
White and separate.
Yeah.
You are a holy generation. Excuse me. You are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should show forth the praises of Him who hath called you out of darkness into His marvelous light, which in time past were not a people. If you're not a people, what were you? Which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. Again, we're back to that great word, a peculiar people. An I am doesn't believe. The I am doesn't have a belief system. Now this is going to get weird. You know, you can't have an I am doesn't have an opinion. I mean, we could go through there's neither male nor female, black nor white, Greek nor Jew, nor Democrat or Republican, nor liberal or conservative, nor there is no place for a belief or an opinion. Once you've put away, divorced the language. I mean, all that stuff was, we had to go through it. It was all the childish stuff. Now you don't have to do that anymore. Now you never have to again, even the slightest even hint of appearance. That the Lord has forsaken the earth. Now this will be tested during the fast season. See if you really believe it or not. I mean, we're really called out.
Yeah.
We are really sanctified.
Yeah.
Totally.
I think all those words that you understand.
I was wondering when you were going to get back to where you started, which was really wild, far out, invasion by an alien force, people coming from other planets. And stuff. You got there.
Now, if you haven't listened to the tapes of Monday and Wednesday night, please, 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 please do. You okay? Take it, big guy.